But what about the organization of our own behaviors? Any kind of behavior that you do intentionally has some kind of organization to it. There's a sequence of sub-goals and goals that you organize in order to achieve your overall aim or your overall goal. And knowing where you are in that sequence of behaviors is quite important.
Well, hello and welcome to another episode of the Brain and Brand Show. Hi, I'm your host, Timothy Maurice, your behavioral psychology author. And as always, we endeavor to simplify the brain so that you can apply it to your personal and career life. Today, I am particularly excited about this conversation because I like interesting and novel approaches in terms of how we think about the brain. I am joined by neuroscientist Mohamedi El Gabi. He's going to talk a little bit about how your brain plays out human behavior, much like an instrument. Mohamedi, welcome. How are you?
Thank you very much for having me. I'm great. I'm looking forward to this.
Thank you. Same, man. You know, before we dive into your actual work, neuroscientists intimidate people. Like if you at a bar and you say, hi, people say, hi, how are you? What do you do? And you say, neuroscientist. People just freak out, have to turn around. So what we're going to do is go inside your mind to show that you're just a normal human being like the rest of us. Can we do that?
Absolutely, absolutely. That's going to be easy to do.
All right, cool. So, so I've got seven questions. They're like either or in this fun feature called Inside the Mind, coffee, tea type stuff. All right, here we go. Number one. Heart or brain? By the way, you can only choose one.
I have to choose brain.
I was going to say, if you're a neuroscientist and you choose heart, I may actually stop the interview. Number two, listening or teaching?
Listening.
Number three, hiking or swimming?
Hiking.
Now, these get really tough. Hang in there and good luck. Driving or e-hailing, Ubering?
Driving.
Toronto or Kyoto?
I have been to neither, but I think maybe Kyoto.
Awesome. Number six, you got two more and then you're off the hook. Podcast or newspaper?
I have to say podcast, of course.
And finally, sport or music?
Sport.
Wow. Awesome. Thank you so much for allowing us to go inside your mind. You are pretty normal, Mohamedi. Thank you very much. So let's talk a little bit about you and your interest in the brain. You know, as a neuroscientist, I've got one of my closest friends, Dr. Tara Swart, who it's funny because she did let me know that you guys are fairly normal. But I do find it interesting to see what drives you guys. What's driving you? Why did you decide to become a neuroscientist?
That's a really interesting question. I think it's because the brain is one of those things that's it's kind of one of the frontiers where we just don't really understand what's going on, but it's also quite close to us. It's about us, kind of. And so, you know, every day, 7 billion people wake up and their brains wake up and they get to work, and it's right there, but we don't quite understand it. We don't know what's going on there. It's a bit like, you know, it's up there with the big questions, like the origin of the universe and so on. But unlike those other big questions, it's very personal, and it's also very close to us. It's right there. The brain is right there in front of us, and we don't understand it. So I think that was the thing that sort of intrigued me, and I've always wanted to find out how it works.
Aren't you glad you are a neuroscientist in this particular time in history versus, let's say, 80 years ago? I mean, the technology has exploded in growth, right?
Absolutely. Yes. Yes, it is a great time to do this. Even just in the last 10 years, what we could do now, we couldn't do 10 years ago at a very fundamental level. So, more and more people are pushing the boundaries. So it is absolutely a perfect time to answer some of these interesting questions about how the brain works.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, one of the reasons why I'm interested in writing and researching about it myself is specifically that. But I want you to give people a little bit of insight into something we can do now that we could not do 25 years ago relative to the research that you're doing.
Right. So I think there are probably two main things that are different now. One is we have a set of incredible tools that give you incredible precision. So you can go in and look at the cells in the brain, the individual cells that fire up and are important for perception and thought and memory and so on. You can not only look at these individual cells and see how they fire, but you can also manipulate these cells at more and more precision. You can switch some of them on and off. You can stop two of them from communicating, and then see what happens behaviorally, what this actually causes in the brain. So, and not only are we able to record from thousands of cells simultaneously now, we could also manipulate them. So practically, that's the first thing that's changed. But also theoretically, the second thing that's happening is that because of many iterations between sort of theory and experiment, we're at a point where there are serious theories that are making quite clear predictions that we can test experimentally. And so it's an exciting time to be in this field and be able to leverage both of these massive advances.
I want to make this super practical for people. Am I wrong? You can just tell me if I'm wrong. But we're actually at a stage, for example, when it comes to manipulating cells, that if you're studying a female and a male rat, you can tweak different parts of the brain to make them slightly more sexual or not. Yes or no?
Yes, I think that, well, sexual in the sense of as in
Desire.
to increase the desire. I can imagine that that is pretty simple. I don't know of anything off the top of my head that's done that specifically, but I
Yeah.
can imagine that if you target some nucleus in the hypothalamus somewhere, you probably
Yes.
can do that.
Yeah. Yeah. I came across that research and I was sharing it with my partner. I won't share what the outcome of that conversation was, but let's dive into your let's dive into your research. You know, one of the things I love about the idea that the brain plays out behavior, because if you look at the brain is a bit of a symphony, like the different regions of the brain influence and behavior. I think that is something that has shifted over the years, is that people thought, you know, brain regions operated or acted in isolation.
Off thinking
But that's not
the
true,
different
right?
bits
Several
of the brain doing
regions,
different things,
almost all regions work
but
together
it
to
was
kind
kind
of
of
produce behavior.
very speculative. It was
Absolutely.
the
I mean, it's
phrenology
interesting that you can demonstrate
type
that.
of pseudoscience, and then there was a massive reaction against that, saying no, that's all nonsense. It is a pseudoscience, but as a reaction, we went the other way. We said actually the whole brain is integrated. Then we started seeing all these lesion studies with very specific lesions causing very specific changes in personality and so on, like Fineas Gage and Henry Molaison. And then we went back to this sort of specialization, and now we're coming sort of the pendulum is swinging closer to the middle now. We were thinking, okay, yes, there is some modularity in the brain, but it is we need to think about the brain as an integrated system. And think about networks spanning multiple regions. So that's where we are now, I think.
Awesome. So let's talk a bit about your research and what some of your findings are that even surprised you, if any.
Right. So I think the background for this research is this idea of cognitive maps. So that's the idea that we don't just store experiences as sort of isolated memories. We somehow try and organize these experiences. And this organization turns out to be quite important for intelligence and for intelligent behavior. And so there's been a big tradition going back to the sort of early 20th century of studying cognitive maps behaviorally, but also finding neurons in the brain that organize this information. And so our work is just an extension of that, really. But what it tries to do that's slightly different, slightly new, is it tries to say, okay, we organize information about things out there in the world, and we know some of the neurons that do this, the regions in the brain that do this. But what about the organization of our own behaviors, right? So any kind of behavior that you do intentionally has some kind of organization to it. There's a sequence of sub-goals and goals that you organize in order to achieve your overall aim or your overall goal. And knowing where you are in that sequence of behaviors is quite important. It helps you generalize across different situations. You know, for example, if you're if you've cooked a lot of meals, if you cooked a lot of meals, you might realize that there's some kind of general structure to cooking. There's a kind of vegetable chopping step at the start. There's a heating step somewhere towards the middle, and then there's a seasoning step. And if I gave you a new meal, I asked you to cook a new meal, and I gave you a set of ingredients, you without giving you any instructions about how to do it, you might very well be able to just infer what the steps need to be based on this kind of knowledge of what it takes to cook a meal. So that's the kind of
Okay.
question that we try to address.
So why should leaders, I have a large leadership audience or people who are entrepreneurs, why should they care about this research? You know, for me, I want to make sure that people, because my background is applied neuroscience, I want to make sure that people are at the forefront who actually want to take this information forward, who want to share it with their teams, who want to help people around them.
Right. I mean, there's the primary reason why I care. I can answer sort of from my perspective. The primary reason that I care is because it's about understanding how the brain works, and it's about something quite fundamental about the way that we organize our behavior. And so that's the primary reason why I think I care, at least. But I think there are implications, practical implications of knowing this. That are gonna be more apparent in the future. But things like, you know, understanding what might go wrong with this path, with these pathways. So clinical applications. But also, you know, there's a movement in AI that tries to now look at sort of autoletic agents, and agents are able to generate their own goals and use them to behave intelligently. And so, there's some interest in trying to dig deep into the areas of the brain that do this, and that are not just building models of the world, but actually building models of your internally generated goals and how they relate to each other. So there's applications on that side as well, on the sort of a new AI side, if you like.
Awesome. If I'm in a relationship, whether it's a colleague and I who are investing in a product or in a relationship at home with a potential with a partner, understanding that your brain is creating behaviors like, you know, music, an instrument creating music, why should that matter to an individual? Like, how could that knowing this shift how I see the person I'm working with.
Some people think that that's the fundamental thing that the brain's doing, that it's first and foremost developing or creating behaviors. And the perception and the maps of the outside world come later because it needs to it needs these behaviors to be somehow aligned with the outside world, and that needs to come into the decisions that the brain makes. Deeper level, if your behaviors are goal-directed, then you might understand. You might understand the goals of others better if you can understand your own goals. And so, one idea, for example, is that the same brain region that organizes your own behaviors and organizes your own goals is all it's doing is it's building a model of yourself in the sense that it's kind of saying, here are all my goals, here are the things that I want to do in my life. Here are my plans of how I want to do these things. So these are my sub goals. This is the first thing I'm going to do, the second thing, third thing. So now it just goes beyond like a short behavior like cooking a meal, and now to sort of more long-term life goals that you might have. We think that the same brain region might be involved in doing that. It might be using similar algorithms and similar neurons to tell you where you are relative to your goals. And also, it might be using similar or related algorithms to give you theory of mind so that you know what the other person's goals are. So if you're in a relationship and you are trying to be nice to your partner and trying to develop a relationship with your partner, you're having to kind of understand what their goals are as well, and where they are relative to their goals, and what you can do to help them, and sort of vice versa. So, but this is one direction that this research could go in, trying to understand these sort of long-term goals and how they relate to theory of mind.
I think this is what gets me excited as well, is that each day we're inching closer and closer and closer to really understand how neurons, cells produce these models in a way that, I think it does scare me a little bit. I can't lie that if AI can produce these models and activity in the brain that mirrors, then this is where you get the extraordinary power of robots to mimic human behavior, right?
Right, and even worse, not just mimic them, but also set their own goals, which is it's a scary thing. Who knows what kind of goals they're going to set themselves. I don't think we're anywhere close to that yet. But there's a kind of tension because on the one hand, these AI models are kind of useful tools for understanding how the brain might work, or at least intelligence in a more general sense. And so you want to give them as much of our capacities as possible, but on the other hand, of course, you don't want to have this go unchecked. But I think the good news is that if we understand deeply how this happens, at the nuts and bolts of it, the cells, the neurons, and how they do this, then we can interpret what's going on. And so that we can have a little bit more control over what's going on. And this is why there's a big push in the AI field towards interpretability and AI safety in that sense.
Sure. Did you see the Kim Kardashian Tesla robot situation?
No, I have not heard of this, no.
Yeah. So basically, Tesla has produced this robot, and Kim Kardashian was holding hands with it, making love signs with the robot. And the first thing that came to my mind was, oh my God, some of these predictions about humans having full-on relationships with robots is as not as far away as we think. And now I realize I am interviewing somebody who could be responsible for the first for the first human robot to get married. Listen, Mohammadi, listen, if I really genuinely hope that your research does not take us down that pathway, but if it does and you win a Nobel Prize, good luck to you, okay? But I'm gonna stay with my humans and
I promise not to do that. I'll try my best.
What finally, what is your big takeaway? What is the big thing that you want our audience to take away from this conversation? And why I'm gonna share the link to the paper and why they should potentially read this or not.
I mean, if they're interested in the idea that we can know where we are, quote unquote, not just in the world, but in our own internally generated behaviors, where we are relative to our goals. And they want to dive deep into sort of the latest thinking, latest ideas about this, and how it can happen at the mechanistic level. That is, how the individual neurons in the prefrontal cortex in the front of the brain can potentially do this. And how we can basically infer some of the algorithms that the brain uses to do this directly from observing the data, then I think they might be interested in reading the paper. But if they find this all geeky, then way more interesting things they can be doing.
I agree. Mohammed, thank you so much. I really appreciate you joining us on the Brain and Brand Show. And guys, please share this episode with somebody who is as geeky as us. Until next time.